Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, day to be different, just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming Midway 1548 Satellite Islam, and to those of you listening to us on our DSTV audio bouquet. And it's just wonderful to have all of you back in. I've been away for a couple of weeks, but alhamdulillah, it's good to be back in the studios of Radio Islam. Coming this morning, lots of cloud cover. We've had lots and lots of rain, and alhamdulillah, we've been truly blessed. Looking at our gardens, yes, many of the gardens are flourishing. But when we started out the season, we're not too sure what was going to happen. And yes, everything belongs to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and He's the best of planners. This morning, we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest, and there's none other than JJ from Garden World, and he's going to take us through some of the things to be done at this particular time of the world. I beg your pardon, this time of, you know, in our gardens. And if you have any queries, any questions, remember you could dial us and call at 854-1548. Mohammed waiting to take on your calls. I know many of you may have questions and queries. And the first thing we're going to start off with is the rain and the water. Hi, good morning, JJ.
Good morning, good morning, good morning to all our listeners out there.
Thank you very much. And like I said, you know, it's been just when we started out, was not too sure what is going to happen to the season. But we are all grateful for the rain that we have. Let's talk about the water situation. While the dams are not full and we still have water restrictions with us, but we've had lots, and they say it's going to be above average rainfall for the next couple of weeks. What's your take on that?
You know what, Ismail, I think that we are so fortunate, we are so blessed this year with the rains that we've had. If we think about it, about a year ago, we've had all that heat, and we went through a terrible, terrible dry spell about a year ago. And yes, even though there is still some places in the country which is very dry, hopefully most of the country has had very good rains. Unfortunately, our rains has come down in bigger loads, in bigger drops, bigger volumes. And the bigger volumes, yes, it does help with the dams, but it doesn't really help us very much in our gardens always. You know, it creates a lot of erosion, it creates a lot of other problems and a lot of other headaches that we need to work around. But you know what, I'd rather work around those kind of headaches than what I'd work around the drought that we've had in the previous year. And yes, our dams are still getting fuller. They are looking a lot better than what they were looking in the last couple of months. But I spoke to somebody from Rainwater a while ago, and they said that they doubt if the water restrictions will ever really be lifted completely. You know, so we've got to change our mindset into gardening, into the way of thinking, onto how we garden and what we plant and how we do it, how we look after the water, how we look after our biggest resource. You know, it's actually interesting. I wrote an article 2 weeks ago, which went out on our newsletters, the Garden World newsletter, saying that South Africa's population grows with about 750,000 people per year. 750,000 people. Take that, if each person was only using 10 litres, I mean, you know, the flush of a toilet takes up about 5 to 10 litres already. If each person only used 10 litres, that's 7.5 million litres per day.
What?
Can you imagine the amount of water that the strain that we are putting onto the different water departments to produce water?
No, definitely. And, you know, looking at articles coming through, and like you point to in your particular article, but we're definitely in a water-scarce environment. We've got to understand that, and we know that the desert is encroaching. Look at, you know, statistics and showing up. And as we're going into the future, water is always going to be a challenge. So, like you said, perhaps those water restrictions will never be lifted. It's something that we've got to understand and learn to live. And knowing that it's a scarce resource, how are we going to utilize it so that, you know, we maximize what we have?
Correct. Something which is very interesting is the water that we've got today is the amount of water that our parents and our grandparents had 100, 200 years ago. And it will be the same amount of water as what we've got, as what our children and our grandchildren will have one day. So our water volume will never increase, but the way we use our water will determine how much water we will have, how much water we will have to our capability of using. We are in a water-scarce country, and we should actually learn from people who has been going through this for many years. I mean, if you look at a country like Canada, for instance, Canada has got so many more natural resources than what we've got in terms of water. They've got 35,000 lakes of water. In South Africa, I think we've got about 100. But in Canada, all the runoff water gets diverted immediately where we've got our roads, sidewalks and so on. It gets immediately diverted into stormwater drains that takes it back into the dams. Here with us, we've often just let our water flow away. All that necessary water that we could actually be using again and again.
And just, you know, point of that, you know, I was in Canada recently, and I said to you that not only Canada, but also in India, and you know, that the way they've been able to overcome some of these, you know, challenges is, you know, how they utilize water, how they, you know, do things not only in their own environments, but also in public spaces, you know, the mulching and so forth. So they've come to very creative ways in which, as a community and as a society, they are able to conserve. And like you said, you know, that we're never going to get more water coming into the world. The amount of water, that's what we have, and that's what we'll leave behind as a legacy, and that will continue. But there's the amount of people that are increasing all the time, and we've got to share that resource, that scarce resource. So we've got to become smarter, savvy, and, you know, be able to utilize this scarce resource so that everybody has a fair share. And it's not going to eat. I think, JJ, we've learned lots of lessons in the last year. We've learned so much. But many of us, you know, tend to forget those lessons and we go back to our old habits. You know, last year I remember we saying we'll take shorter showers, we'll make sure that we don't wash our pavements with the house. But now you go back and lo and behold, people are still washing. Even though it's raining, they're washing their pavements with the hose pipe. They're, you know, washing their cars. And I think we forget some of these things very easily and we go back to old habits.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, it's very difficult getting everybody to understand that we're not saying don't use water at all, but use water more cleverly, as you were saying. If you think about it, there is so many ways that you can actually save water in the garden. One very, very important point that you mentioned was mulch. Very often people say, but what is mulch? Mulch is any kind of form of product that you can put down that can create a blanket on top of the soil. May it be wood chippings, may it be bark chips, may it be grass cuttings, may it be leaves, may it be newspaper or cardboard boxes, anything that you can put down to retain the moisture. So often we water our gardens at the wrong time of the day, or we water the gardens and we've got a heat start coming past, and that water just evaporates out again. And if we were able to mulch it, a nice, decent 2 inches thick mulch around your plants, your watering that you will need in your garden will be cut down by more than a third. By more than 60%. So you'll use less than a third the amount of water of what you normally use in your garden. And your plants will learn to look after themselves. Because if you were to water your garden on a daily basis, what would be the reason for the plants of developing deep, strong root systems? The plants will know my water is coming every single day. I only need to have a very small root system. That's all that I need, because that will sustain this big plant. But very often, if you then go away for a week or so, or if you go away for 4 days, you come back and your garden is half dead and you don't understand what's going on. You've been looking after your garden so well before you went away. And now that you've gone away, now it's suddenly died. But it's because your plants have never learned to look after themselves. They've never been able to force in those deep root systems and spread them out wide, so that the deeper watering that normally is a much better way of watering is actually more effective to them. It's better to water once a week, twice a week, for longer than what it is to water on a daily basis, because then your plant's root systems can actually grow deeper and go and look for water all over, and you'll have a much stronger drought-resistant plant or water-savvy plant.
You know, the analogy that you're drawing is saying, you know, it's about a spoiled child, you know. So you just give in to his demands and he keeps on. The day you're not there, then you find that, you know, the tantrums come up, and something similar with this type of thing. So if you're giving this plant, you know, just giving this plant the water that it wants, it's not going to sort of look for survival and, you know, go and look for the water. So it's going to be dependent on that. And like you said, and, you know, a couple of weeks or a couple of days when you go away and you come back, you find a garden that you left is not the same. It's been sort of withered away, and the reason perhaps is that we've, you know, given it too frequent water. Fantastic, but thank you very much for that. I think it's something that we all could use from. Still talking about water, and you know, the other thing that that somebody's been talking about, and I've been also noticing, is that, you know, the lawns suddenly have grown very lush and thick because we've had that amount of water, and there's nothing better than rainwater to come and, you know, turn everything green. And you found that, you know, the lawns are now doing exceptionally well, but they've become very, very, you know, sort of, they're overgrown every now and then. You've got to mow them more constantly. And have you found that coming through with customers coming in to talk to you at this nursery?
You see, your biggest problem now with the lawns is that your lawns grow so fast at the moment with all the rains that we've got, that if you do not mow your lawns regularly enough, you actually will be killing your lawns. So it's very, very important for us all to make sure that we mow our lawns at least once a week or twice a week, so that you can cut away that top blade, not to create too much shade on the lower parts. It's also very important for you to make sure now not to feed too much nitrogen. If you're now going to be feeding nitrogen, it's normally the first letter in the fertilizer formulas, like for instance a 713 or an LAN. If you're going to be feeding your lawns with an LAN or a 713 at the moment, you will be boosting the leaf growth even more. And unfortunately, your mowing is going to have to increase from once to twice a week to twice to three times a week if you want to keep it a decent lawn. So rather give it now something for stronger root development, something like, for instance, a 3-2-1. A 3-2-1 or a 2-3-2 is very good for strong root development, and that will then force the plant to develop a stronger root so that when the dry period starts again, that the roots will be strong enough to sustain the plant, and then again it will be easier for you to maintain the lesser leaf growth. You understand what I'm getting to?
So yeah, definitely.
That the lawns don't just bulge out in green, and you've got to keep on mowing them and cut all that energy away, because remember, every time you mow the lawn, you cut the energy away. You're cutting away the part that photosynthesizes, the green bit that actually produces food, is what you are cutting away, and that is what you don't want to do.
Now, you know, we're coming to the tail end of summer. We've got about approximately 6 weeks of still summer, maybe a bit less, maybe more, depending on how, or you know, autumn and winter creeps into us. Now, there's specific tasks still to be done in the garden. Let's start with trees. What do we do? Is it still time for us to be looking at trees? Could we still plant trees? Is that too late? Should we wait until autumn sets in? Tell us something about the trees.
Your best time to plant a tree is any time of the year except for spring. So even though if you are planting a nice and hardy tree, fantastic, it is still a very good time to plant it. Remember that you cannot take a tree now from a nice and warm area and then plant it into a cooler area, and then suddenly winter will set in and will kill the tree. So rather go to your local nursery, go to somebody in a similar climate than what you are, and get some trees from them and plant them into your garden. Getting back to the water, your trees has obviously got a much stronger root system, much deeper root system, and your trees will then also survive on a lot less water with time to come. If you are in an area where there is not a lot of water available, the trees will also then help create some shade, which will in turn make the plants underneath it or in the area around it use a lot less water as well. So yes, it is a time now we can still plant trees in the garden. And remember that if you are planting a tree now, go determine, would I like to plant an evergreen tree, something which is not going to lose its leaves, or would I prefer planting a deciduous tree so that the winter sun will actually still penetrate the garden, penetrate the house? Because that's very important. Very often people plant a big evergreen tree on the eastern side of the house or on the northern side of the house, and then in winter you've got a very, very cold house. So yes, trees are good. And getting back to the trees itself, what else should we be doing? We often say prune your trees in winter, but if there is some branches which is now casting either too much shade, a too dense shade, or which looks like they might be breaking off with all this extra growth that we've had now for summer, with all the rains that we've had, go and cut those branches off. Remember, if you are cutting those branches at the moment, you've got to seal the wounds. You cannot just cut the branches and leave them as is. You'll have a lot of insect, a lot of fungi entering the wound if you don't seal the wound at the moment. You can use a prune seal, you can use a tree seal, you can also use a bit of PVA paint on that.
Thank you very much. You know, just talking about fungi and so forth, there still seems to be a bit of an outbreak of mildew. Tell us something about that.
Unfortunately, mildew loves this warm, moist conditions that we've got at the moment, and so often people don't know what mildew looks like. But mildew, especially on a lot of your evergreens and your tropical plants, for instance on your hydrangeas, on your fuchsias, on your roses, on your begonias, you often find that it's got that white shine on it. It looks like a powder that's actually been chucked over it or dusted over it, and that is what we normally call a powdery mildew. So powdery mildew is, unfortunately, once you see the disease, it has already set in the plant, or it has already started affecting the plant more than a week ago. So therefore, it's very important that if you've got powdery mildew on your plants, use something systemic that you're able to spray the plants with, spray the soil around it with, and then spray the extra meter or two plants surrounding that area as well. Because remember, mildew is a fungus, and fungus are spread by spores. And a spore is so small, so fine, that it gets blown over from one side to the other in the smallest of breezes, or the lightest of breezes. And with the warm weather, with the moist weather that we've got at the moment, mildew is flourishing. And unfortunately, the heat and all the rains that we've had this year, the disease has been out of hand. It has really been difficult to control. And unfortunately, if you are not going to control it, if you're not going to do something about it, you will have a much bigger problem next year. And please understand me clearly. I don't say eradicate the problem. You've got to control it, because you can never eradicate it, but you can control it.
Let's just go back, you know, so when you talk about systemic, do we have something that would be organic or systemic? Always to be something chemical, because when you do something systemic, it's got to go through the root system. Take us through some of that.
None of the organic insecticides and, none of the organic fungicides is actually systemic. So unfortunately, no. There is lots of organic products that you can be using, like for instance your copper counts, your phytos. There's lots of different fungicides that you can use which is organic. What you must remember with a lot of your organic chemicals is that your organic treatment, it's very often life cycle disruptors. So it's not necessarily always going to kill it immediately. What it will do is it will disrupt the life cycle. So it will prevent it, for instance, from multiplying. It will prevent it from spreading. It will prevent it from going through its normal life cycle in producing more. So therefore, organic is a very good way of doing it, but it is a longer way of doing it. So do not spray today and expect results this afternoon. Spray today and carry on spraying, and eventually, as you go through, you will be able to get rid of it. Something which has been on the market for many years, but which a lot of people have forgotten about, is flowers of sulfur. That's also organic, and that you can also put especially on your vegetables and so on. It works very well. That's a dusting powder that you can dust around your veggies, and that'll help in with your all your different fungal diseases. Might be your black spot, might be your rust, might be your powdery mildew. If you were to go the synthetic route, and you were to go the systemic route, there's many different systemic fungicides available. Tenazole is one of them. Aureus is another. But go to your local nursery and ask them, guys, what have you got that I can use which is systemic? Please don't ever use systemic products on vegetables which is in fruit or which is ready in ripening. Normally, most of your systemic products should only be used on smaller seedlings and plants that has not set fruit at all as yet.
Yes, I think that's so important, because, you know, once it's taken up into the root system, the systemic, the poison is still there, and it would sort of have an impact, a negative impact on human beings. So I think that's important. What you've just mentioned now about flowers of sulfur, it was very interesting. I think some time back, someone said to us, you know, that is what they normally use to get a better yield and a sweeter yield in plants and so forth. And here you're giving us another use of the flowers of sulfur that you could use to control the mildew, so that's fantastic. The other thing about flowers of sulfur is you'd have to get it either from your regular garden center. I'm not too sure if all garden centers would have it, or also from a pharmacy. Is that correct?
Well, most garden centers should stock it. It's actually it used to be very difficult to find, but nowadays it's very easy to find. And most of the wholesalers do have the flowers of sulfur. So you can go to your local nursery. If they don't have, let them order it in for you. Because if you do not create the demand at the nursery, they won't know what you want. You know, they won't know in which direction your community is working. So go to your local nursery and tell them, guys, get us some flowers of sulfur. We want to grow our veggies organically.
And, you know, flowers of sulfur, you know, you could buy a quantity, and it's not that expensive, am I right?
I think a 1 kilo nowadays sells for about 35 rands.
Yes, sir.
And 1 kilo in a standard garden is more than enough to go through a couple of months, you know, so definitely it's not that expensive at all.
And like we said, you know, like someone said, we were chatting to someone, when they said to us that definitely if you want to increase or the sweetness in your plants and, you know, bring in more juice and so forth, use flowers of sulfur and you'd be amazed with the results. Now, you know, JJ Welch, we're talking about, you know, the mildew and the rain and the water. What other things do have to be done? We've got just about, we'll chat that after the news. We'll talk about all of that. There's a number of things that have come in, a number of questions. We'll do all of that after the news. Thanks, and we'll chat to you in a couple of minutes. Thanks, JJ.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, day to be different, just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, MediaWave 1448 Satellite Islam. Just wonderful time to be out in the garden, nice and cool, and we've had lovely ground cover, a bit of cloud cover, and we've had some wonderful rain. And this morning we're joined by JJ from Garden World, giving us some fantastic tips and also chatting about what's happening in the world of gardening. And remember, you could join our conversation number to dial this morning, 854-1548, with any queries, any questions. I know some of you still snuggled in bed and others at the breakfast table, but do join us, and we've got a number of questions that have come through already. Hi, good morning, JJ. Thanks for being with us once again. Hello, JJ.
Welcome. Thanks. Hi, Ismail. I'm with you.
Thank you very much. Now, you know, just a couple of queries is coming. Herbs, is that too late? And I know you have some special in herbs. Tell us about herbs.
All right. So herbs is not too late. No, you can plant herbs throughout the year. And very often you've got to plant it throughout the year because they're not always available. So make sure that you go to your local nursery now, go and see what herbs is available, what do you normally use, and plant it. Because if we think about things like rue, for instance, rue you don't get throughout the year. Catnip you don't get throughout the year. But now in late summer, you get so many more of those herbs which you don't find, especially in summer when you normally want to plant up your herb garden. So that should be a working progress. That should be something which you would never stop. It would be a going on or an ongoing process that you can go to your local nursery once every, say, 3 months or so, see what's new, see what's fresh, and plant it. You know, the nice thing nowadays is that there is so many different kinds of berries available. I'm expecting my berry order again to come through tomorrow because I've run out of things like raspberries and blueberries and berries.
Sorry, man, I don't know. We're not you breaking up, please. Could you just repeat?
No.
What berries do you have in stock?
So the raspberries, the blackberries, the blueberries, I'm expecting my new order to come through tomorrow. But nowadays what they've got is even what they call a tayberry, which is a blackberry-raspberry mix. So I cannot wait to see the new variety, the tayberry, coming through. And it is so easy to plant it in your garden and to love that wonderful berries that you can pick straight from the garden and use in your salads, use in your food.
Now, just talking about those particular berries and talking about them, do they have special care? Can they be grown in containers? Because many of our listeners may not have, you know, large spaces for gardens, but want to plant berries. Berries need lots of space? No, yes. Or do they do well in containers?
They don't need a lot of space, and they do very well in containers. You know what's our biggest problem that we normally, or our biggest mistake that we normally make with berries? We don't make the soil acidic enough. Remember, your berries love acid soil. So you've got to go through and get some acid compost when you plant them, or acid mix when you plant them in your containers or in the ground. And then if you want it even more acidic, you can use your hydrangea food to make it more acidic, or you can go to the aluminium sulfate route. If you put some aluminium sulfate on the soil once every couple of months, that'll get it very acidic, and that'll give you beautiful berry fruit and berries to harvest.
Someone said, you know, if you don't, you just throw a couple of batteries in there. I'm not sure if that still works. A couple of batteries, you know, batteries, used batteries, you know.
Batteries.
Yes.
But
they said it does. I'm not too sure, but I know someone once said, if you want and you're wanting to make your soil acidic, you know, dig in a couple of batteries, use batteries, and as it breaks down, it would make that particular area more acidic. But not too sure. That's just something that I'm not sure if it's a white, you know, all wise tale, or is it something that, but people swear by it and say it does work.
No, I'd rather go with a tea leaf root, or I'll get myself some fresh pine needles and I'll put that down to mulch. Remember, your pine needles, when they're still fresh, when they're still green, they do give off an acid. But when they go dry, there's no more acidity left in them. So if you go and find dead, dry pine needles, it's not going to help you at all. But if you were able to get some fresh pine needles and strip some branches with that fresh green pine needles, that'll make sure that your garden is more acidic.
So what we now come back is that if you're wanting to plant those berries, plant them in acidic soil, and if it's in a container, well and good, and you would definitely have a wonderful yield and harvest. And you say there's a couple of new ones coming on, which we should be looking out for. Another question coming in is that many of the, you know, fruiting trees have now, you know, already fruited. For example, figs, grenadellas maybe still be in abundance. What should be done with those particular you know, trees, any particular case, just wait for it to die down, or, you know, not die down, but rather, you know, once the fruit has stopped, you know, tree has stopped producing fruit, what should be done?
Well, the most difficult thing is to prune your fruit trees at the right time of the year. Now, especially if we look at things like stone fruits and so on, which is your peaches and your apricots and those kind of things, that we must prune in winter because we want that new spring fresh growth coming through with spring blossoms, which will be producing a lot of new fruit. But if you're looking at your evergreens, maybe your mangoes, maybe your avocados, maybe some of your nut tree varieties, maybe some citrus varieties, if your fruit trees has already set fruit and has already finished fruiting, now is actually a very good time to prune them back, get them into shape and produce a lot of new growth. Because remember, you would like to shape the tree, you'd like to get it ready for spring, but without the new growth, you're not going to have a lot of fruit. So if you were to wait for winter, you're not going to have a lot of new growth for spring. If you're going to wait until spring, you will be cutting a lot of the blossoms away, which is supposed to be creating some fruit. So now, during autumn and so on, is actually a good time, or late summer into the beginning of autumn, is a very good time to prune them, to start forcing the new growth to get your tree in shape correctly, and also to produce more new growth for more new fruit, because a lot of your fruit trees bears better on newer growth. And if you're not going to force new growth, you're not going to be able to get that get lots of fruit from it. The other thing is as well, a very big trend, you were talking about the berries in containers, a big trend nowadays is planting your fruit trees in containers. I mean, we do not need a mango tree that grows 6 or 8 meters tall in a small garden. We want something small, even if it produces for us 6 or 8 fruit in a season. That is fantastic, because then you could have your mango, your avocado, your citrus, your apple, whatever, right next to one another in containers, and you can still have the benefit of the fruit in a smaller garden.
So going back to, so for the fig tree, you could prune it now just for new growth, because, you know, it stopped fruiting. And what about the grenadilla? Nothing. What do we do with grenadilla? Because it grows into a very messy bush.
A very untidy bush. Yeah, you actually are supposed to prune your grenadilla in any case, because if you're not going to prune your grenadilla, it is going to grow bigger and bigger and bigger. And remember, then it will only last you about 3 to 4 years. Well, if you were to prune it and you are constantly forcing out new growth, you might get a 6 or 8 years out of it. So what you've got to do is, as soon as it's finished fruiting, you normally cut the 50% of the plants away to force new growth coming through. You're not going to get a lot of new growth with the grenadilla now for winter, but in any event, if you were to cut it back after winter, you'll get lots of new growth coming through, and you'll get a lot of new fruit coming from it as well. Remember that your yellow grenadilla is actually on the list of alien invaders, so you're not allowed to plant the yellow grenadilla anymore. It is a very wild growing grenadilla, and that is the real passion fruit. Your purple grenadilla is the one that you are still allowed to plant, and that is the one that does not really take over. So make sure that when you buy the grenadillas, make sure that you do get the purple grenadilla, so that you are also looking after our water and looking after our resources by not planting alien invaders.
Okay. Now, a couple of other questions that have come through is, I have fruit tree, apricot, apple, plums. It's not bearing fruit. And then goes and says, my oranges are not sweet. She lives in Johannesburg. For the oranges, I know somebody said use flowers or sulfur. Do you have any other recommendation?
Yes, I do. There's two other products which is fantastic to use. One of them being your common old Epsom salts.
Okay.
Sold in the nurseries as magnesium sulfate. So if you were to put that down, that'll bring the flavor out. But nowadays, there's a new fertilizer out which has got biocarbon in it. So if you go to the nursery and you ask them which fertilizers do contain biocarbon, the biocarbon is normally added as an 815 or a 315 with an additional E at the end. Flower Power, for instance, is an organic one which has got the biocarbon in with it. And that is fantastic, because carbon brings the color of the flavor of the fruit, and it makes the plants a lot stronger, and you'll need a lot less fertilizer to feed the plants with. So it makes your fertilizer more concentrated. So don't look for fertilizers that does contain biocarbon.
Okay, so Epsom salt, biocarbon, flowers of sulfur. Let's have the next one. I have fruit trees, apricot, apple, plums. It's not bearing fruit. What do you think has gone wrong? Is it something to do with not feeding?
Very often it's got to do with not feeding. Very often it's got to do with not watering, and not watering enough at the right time. Remember, if your if your plants are blossoming, they need to be pollinated. And if the plant does not get enough water, the blossoms will dry out before it's been pollinated, and you will not get any fruit set, or you'll not get any fruit development. So that could be the one. The other one could be that they didn't prune it well, or prune it at the right time. Remember apricots, if you prune it, you will not get any fruit that season, because your apricots fruit on last year's growth. So you're not supposed to prune back your apricot every single year. Rather do it every 4 or 5 years just to shape it, because an apricot overall grows very big. And then the last one could be with a feeding that they did not use the right food. Fruit that does not contain enough potassium in it. So if you're looking at your fruit, what should you look for? One which is very high at the end, like an 815 or a 315, that 5 at the end produces fruit or flowers. And that will then help you get enough flowers and fruit from the tree.
Thank you very much for that one. And I've got another query coming. I plant roses. It bears flowers, but the leaves seem to be being eaten up. Any particular reason for that?
Unfortunately, this time of the year, yes, we do still have the Christmas beetle, the chafer beetle, flying around at night and eating up all the new growing soft leaves of roses, of veggies, of whatever. So, yes, we've got to treat against it. If we do not treat against it, unfortunately, we will be stuck with a much bigger problem next year. So the organic way, or the easiest way of getting rid of it, is to get I don't like using soap in the garden, but there's there is a few times when you can use soap in the garden, and this is very important. You get yourself the green sunlight soap, the bar, not dishwashing liquid, the bar that looks like a square block. And you'll grate about 2 tablespoons full of into a 10-liter watering can, fill it up with lukewarm water, stir it up nicely, and then water it in around your roses. Remember, your Christmas beetle climbs into the ground at night, late in the evening, and then it sits there during the day, or it sleeps there during the day. So if you are taking that soap and you are watering it into the garden, into the areas where you've got the problems, you will have the soap breaking down the wax layer on the beetle, and it will then allow bacteria to actually kill the beetle. So that's an easy way of getting rid of it without destroying or without spraying chemicals. If it is bigger shrubs and you don't really know where it is, get some systemic insecticide. Plant care is a very good one. Aphicide is a very good one. And spray the plants with it. As soon as the beetle leaves, it will die. It's a stomach poison.
Thank you very much for that one. And a couple of queries with regards to citrus. What are the watch points? We're now getting to a season where we soon have the first bounty of our citrus fruits. And some of the trees already, in flower. What should we be doing?
The worst thing that you can do now is to give it too much nitrogen, because your fruit skin will be very thick, and you will not have a lot of decent fruit coming from it. So do not give it nitrogen. Rather give it now organic 315, and make sure that you do it regularly, because the fruit does take a lot of energy out of the plant, and if you're not going to sustain it, it will start shedding the leaves. It will drop shed the fruit. It will drop the fruit. It will wean it. So you will not have a lot of fruit setting. You've also got to look out for all the new growth. There's a lot of psyllium, which is still around, which is still attacking the new growth, and that's when your new leaves becomes very bubbly and very knobbly, and they look diseased. They look like they've got warts on them. So there you can spray something like the plant care or the aphicide on it, but please remember that it stays for 3 weeks in the plant. So you cannot spray it when your fruit has started ripening, or when your fruit has started discoloring into a ripening color. When you've got, say, about a month or so left before harvesting, then you can still spray it. But any less time than that, I wouldn't spray it. I'd rather just break off those new leaves that has been diseased, and I'd take the fruit to finish develop before I then start treating the plant.
So, and perhaps we could use also the bicarbon, the Epsom salt, and the flowers of sulfur, could we?
Oh, definitely. The bicarbon and the Epsom salt will give it brilliant fruit. It will give your plant a lot more fruit of a much better quality, fruit of a much better size, and the fruit itself will taste a lot better.
Question I've heard is about black insects. Person says he sees these black insects, they're coming, and just when the sun rises, then they all disappear. They haven't done any damage to the garden. Do you know what the insect is, and do you think something to be concerned of?
there's a lot of these beetles which is actually benign, so it means it's a beetle that has got no real harm to plants. They are carnivorous. So if you see that the black insect is some of those small beetles, they call them, I think it's an army beetle or a shield beetle, I'm not 100% sure of their name, but in any case, it actually looks very dangerous, it looks very harmful, but they literally just sit on the plants and they eat the insect that walks onto the plant, they eat ants, they eat aphids, so they don't do any damage to the plant whatsoever. So don't necessarily worry too much about it. They are there for a very short period of time, normally only a week or so, and then they're gone, and then you can easily, you can treat them if need be, but overall it's not a big problem.
Question here with regards to garlic. When do I know garlic is ready, and is it time to plant garlic and also that one ginger?
All right, so garlic you can plant any time of the year, because garlic is very hardy, but what you've got to remember is garlic takes 11 months to be ready, so it's not a case where I can tell you look for this or look for that when it's ready. You will know that 11 months after you've planted it, you can harvest it and it will be ready. So very often you look at the flower, when the flower starts developing, you actually break the flower off and you then give it about another month or two, and then you know that the fruit has set or the bulb has set and you can lift it. Ginger is a bit more of a difficult one because ginger you can pick at any time. You don't have to necessarily wait for it to be ready. But ginger, if you were to plant, say, 10 or so ginger roots, they take long before they really develop, and they love a very warm tropical climate. So with us here in Johannesburg, it's a bit more difficult getting our ginger to grow and getting it to develop, but nevertheless, yes, you can plant your ginger, and it normally takes a good 4 months to 8 months before you can really start harvesting it, but make sure that you keep it nice and warm and water it well, but don't overwater it. Make sure that the ground is moist, but don't overwater it, because remember, the garlic and the ginger both is bulbous plants. And if you're going to overwater it, you will make it rot away. So okay. Be careful not to over, make sure that you plant it in well-drained soil.
Just with both the ginger and the garlic, while, you know, they're on the ground, you normally have the stems coming through or some of the, you know, coming through. Are those edible?
The stems of the ginger, as far as I know, is not edible. I'm not sure of that. Garlic, yes, you can take the garlic, yes, and you can take the leaves and you can use it in salads and in cooking and so on. But the bulb normally has got a lot more flavor in it. The leaves is often not as strong. It's very much like a spring onion.
Someone says, I've been given a turmeric bulb, and I've planted it, and it's now coming to leaf, and the plant, what do I do? Do I wait, and how do I know what's to be done with that particular plant?
Turmeric I don't have a lot of experience on, but turmeric takes a long while before it is ready. So turmeric, I'll probably also give it about 6 months or so, and I will wait for it to start flowering or the leaves to start dying down. Once the leaves start dying down, or after it's flowered, we normally break the flowers off because flowers means that it will produce seed instead of bulb. And what we'd normally do is rather break the flowers off from seeding, and then as the leaves then start dying down, you will know that the turmeric is ready to take it out.
Thank you very much. And any other watch points before we go on to what you have at the nursery?
All right, so what we've got to be careful of now at this time of the year is to unnecessarily dig over the soil. You know, if we've got a very warm period coming through and you dig the soil over too often, you'd actually be disturbing the balance in the soil. So prevent your, or don't dig in the soil too much. If you were to dig in the soil, only add compost. Don't just dig in for no reason. Also, feed your plants now with something which is high in potassium. Feed it with something like, for instance, the 315 or the 815, and get the last of the summer color coming through. Remember, what your potassium also does is not only bring you the fruit and the flower, but it also prepares your plants for the winter, because what your potassium does is it makes your stronger, your plant cells stronger, and so that it can withstand severe winds, severe cold, severe dry periods, anything like that will then help the plant. So very often, just before winter, I tell people, feed your lawns with an 815 or a 315. And they look at me as if I want the lawn to flower or I want the lawn to fruit. No, it's not that. If you know that you are in an area where you are not able to water your garden during winter, or where you know it's a very cold area where the lawn normally battles over winter, feed it with some 815. It will stay longer green, and it will also recover a lot quicker after winter. look out for the insects, look out for caterpillars, especially on the lawns. At the moment, there's a lot of your army worms, your lawn caterpillars, which is devouring the lawns. So make sure that if you see that my lawn is not looking good, look out for the army worms and spray them. Treat against them, because they will lay eggs and they will come back with a vengeance next year. They're only around from about January to about middle of April, so you only have about another month and a half or so, 2 months, to look after them and make sure that you do get rid of them.
Sorry, I mean, we've come to a very last question, but we've got just about 30 seconds. Cutworms in a compost, can that be got rid of, or how do we do that?
It can be gotten rid of, and all that you do is put some cutworm bait in onto the compost heap. They will come out, they will eat the cutworm bait. Unfortunately, if you don't get rid of them and you spread the compost into the garden, you've got a big problem. So rather try and get rid of them in the compost heap while it's contained, while they are concentrated in one area.
So you just put down the bait and they'll eat it, and what happens? Will they die, or will they come up to the top? How would that happen?
They come to the top, they eat it, they die, and you don't have any problems. Unfortunately, yes, you will have some cutworm eggs still in the compost heap, so you've just got to keep an eye out. Cutworm is in any case something which normally with your smaller, softer seedlings, I would put some cutworm bait down, say every half a meter to every meter in any case, so that you are able to get them out of the ground and to get rid of them in such a way.
Thank you very much. And now finally, we know that Garden World of Kissingers is not only a nursery, it's a destination, an outing for the whole family. The award-winning, spacious and beautiful garden centre is situated in landscape gardens and offers a discerning shopper a wide range of products in a tranquil environment. You can also stroll through our exquisite 2016 Spring Festival designer gardens. They are now looking magnificent, and we offer a wide range of specials and a number of gardening products, and our experts will be on hand to assist you. Anything you'd like to add to that besides giving us the address?
No problem. Yes, Garden World, I don't think if you've ever been to Garden World, I don't know what you are missing. You don't know what you're missing out on. I think this place is fantastic. It's looking so beautiful at the moment, so lush with all the rains that we've had. People literally come out here and they just come and enjoy the green. I think green must be the most calming color out, because people, when they come in here, they just relax. They just love being here. And remember, Valentine's Day is around the corner, so stop it now. For what are you going to be giving your loved one for Valentine's? It might be a flower, it might be a pot plant, it might be a new rose. Look special.
Well, thank you very much for all of that, and I'm not too sure whether we'd be coming in for Valentine's, but definitely for other things people would be coming through. But you take care, JJ, and everything of the best, and we'll sure come to look at some of the berries. That's all from us, until we meet again. Thanks, sir. Bye-bye. Thanks. And that was JJ telling us about the Garden World. And while we do not celebrate Valentine's Day, we do not agree with that. But there's lots of other things that we can get from Garden World. So if you're wanting to look for berries, remember, there's something that you could go, and I must say it would be fascinating to see all the new berries that are coming up. So if you are looking for something different, please do go down. And JJ will be at hand at the nursery. Mohammed has given me a notice to say that the first Garden Club meeting for 2017 will take place on the 11th of February 2017, time 1:30 for 2. Topic: herbs and veggies for a healthier lifestyle. The address is Corner Bayers Nodier and Aisterhout Road, Rand Park Ridge. That's at Lifestyle. For more info, contact Pam on 011-796-5616. That's 011-796-5616. And that's for the first Garden Club meeting. It's open to everyone. And remember that you could enjoy yourself. There'll be refreshments will be served as well. And a wonderful topic: herbs and veggies for a healthier lifestyle. It's all from me, and we'll meet again, inshallah. Jazakumullah for tuning in. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.